Well, good morning, and thank you for whoever kept clapping. Oh, gosh. You know, speakers always say, thank you so much for having me. But I'm going to say it and actually mean it. I've been coming here for, I don't know, I think maybe decades. Probably some of the kids are in college now. It's sort of part of my routine. I don't actually do much speaking anymore, but coming here feels a lot like coming home, so. I appreciate it. Plus, I'm going to start coming early. Now I'm going to have cheap flights. I'm sorry I missed Black Friday picks, though. I'm really sad about that. So we're going to talk about the power of words, or the art of gracious conversation. It's a huge topic, really exciting topic, and we could stay here for weeks talking about it. I've been fascinated by it for over 20 years, and I think my fascination has grown instead of waned. So I hope that this won't feel like a lecture, so that you feel like you leave with a bunch of how-tos or worse, shoulds. And I just want to say at the outset that since we're all women, it will be very predictable that you'll be listening to my stories and think, oh, I just screamed at Susie this morning, and I should have, and oh no, I've ruined their lives. And I'm here to tell you my children are 37, 40, and 40. I made a lot of mistakes. I still don't know why God didn't give me children at 71. I would do so much better. But he doesn't. He gives them to you when you're really young. So I can't tell you how many times over the years I've thought, dang, why didn't somebody tell me that before it was too late? So anyway, I hope this morning will be fun and enjoyable and energizing for you. I'm going to mostly tell stories, and I'm hoping that they'll trigger memories, stories of yours that you can re-enjoy and to share with other people. I'm not going to talk about wounding words. It's a big topic. There's a lot in scripture about using words as swords. We don't need to be reminded of that. We see it all the time now. What I'm going to talk about is words as gift. And you all have kindly put this up. I might later show you the original. My mom gave me this Picasso print called Hands with Flowers probably 40 years ago, and I dragged it around from office to office, and I brought it this morning. What it has come to depict for me is having to do with the power of words, is that words are a gift. And really, when it comes to gifts, I mean, Christmas, what are you going to give so-and-so? It makes my heart stop, because my answer to that question is always, I have no idea, and I wish we didn't do Christmas. I'm not good at it. But we have, and I never know what to buy. I'm glad to if somebody tells me. But we have words. Every day we have words, and we can give them as gift. So this, to me, depicts my giving you the gift of words today, but it also has come to mean doubly God giving me words to give to other people. So it's a wonderful, uplifting, joyous habit. And of course, we've all read how being kind makes you happier, makes you live longer, fends off the wrinkles, you know, all those kind of things. But really, that's not the point. The point is that we were created in love, by love, for love. And so we are created to give gifts. And our words are powerful, and they're given to us to give. So I want to begin by reading you something from a newspaper from the Civil War era. See if I can read it with my contacts in. I didn't think of this. It's written by a wounded Union soldier, and this isn't sort of make-believe. This is actually was published in a newspaper at the time. I was at the Battle of Gettysburg myself, and an incident occurred there which largely changed my views of Southern people. I had been a most bitter anti-South man and fought and cursed the Confederates desperately. I could see nothing good in any of them. The last day of the fight, I was badly wounded. A ball had shattered my left leg. I lay on the ground not far from Cemetery Ridge, and as General Lee ordered his retreat, he and his officers rode near me. As they came along, I recognized him, and though faint from exposure and loss of blood, I raised up my hands, looked Lee in the face, and shouted as loud as I could, "Hooray for the Union!" The general heard me, looked, stopped his horse, dismounted, and came toward me. I confess that at first I thought he meant to kill me. But as he came up, he looked down at me with such a sad expression on his face that all fear left me, and I wondered what he was about. He extended his hand to me and grasped mine firmly, and looking right into my eyes, said, "My son, I hope you will soon be well." If I live 1,000 years, I'll never forget the expression on General Lee's face. There he was, defeated, retiring from a field that had cost him and his cause almost their last hope. And then he stopped to say words like those to a wounded soldier of the opposition who had taunted him as he passed by. "As soon as General Lee left me, I cried myself to sleep there on the bloody ground." And that reminds me of a favorite poem of mine by Emily Dickinson, where she says, "A word is dead when it is said, some say. I say it just begins to live that day." And this little interchange happened how many years ago?
Over 200.
Yeah. And took no time. But was this a 3-minute exchange, perhaps? And here we are. These words live, for better or for worse. And you see wounding words from the soldier and these healing words from General Lee. So part of the joy of this, and the thing that I think recreates us every time we give words as gift, is especially giving them when they're really not deserved. Because we're made in the image of God. So I want to just tell you a few stories from my own life. And one was from a long time ago, when I was my current height in 7th grade, which is not pleasant. I had that Collier and Stewart were my only choices, because everybody, all the other boys came up to my shoulders. And the day I most dreaded was the day they did twice a year. They lined us all up in the classroom in this small town, and they did your height and your weight. Charlotte hated it because she was plump. I hated it because I was tall. So this self-consciousness, I knew every way to slouch that there was. My grandfather, though, an Irishman, would say to me, "Ah, Bets, you're long and fine as a summer's day." And here I am. I am no longer a 7th grader. And those words still bring emotion. Gifts. They were gifts. And they literally changed how I thought about myself. And they still do. They still do. And then a more recent example, we spend a lot of time up in Maine. And I was in Maine, and I don't think anything was particularly circumstantially going wrong. But I was in a dark hole. You know how you get in those holes where just things look black and kind of hope seems to have drained away. You feel flat and discouraged, disheartened, and I don't know about you, but I isolate when I get like that. Not the best idea, but that's my tendency. So that's where I was on this Sunday afternoon, which was beautiful, but I stayed inside. And I got a text from a friend, just a little short text, saying, "I was talking about you to David the other day," and he said, "Yeah, she's a gem." And those words, again, that was a throwaway comment for him. I'm sure he said it, totally forgot it. She happened to repeat it. By the way, that's the opposite of gossip. She repeated it to me, and those words were enough to light a little tiny part of my day. I just thought, wow, there's somebody can see something that I can't see. I couldn't see any light there by myself, but he could. And so I thought, well, I could go outside. So I went outside, and there was my river. I could get in a kayak. and I got in my kayak, and then from the kayak, I called my friend who had texted, and I said, I want to tell you what I didn't want to tell anybody, which is, wow, I've been crawling along the bottom recently. And she listened. She didn't try to fix anything, but she listened, and by the end of that conversation, I was just paddling along happy as a clam. And I did want to repeat some words to you, which I've come to love. Because this reminds me of what friendship can do and what she did for me. But first, I want to tell you one more friend story. This is some years back, and I was grieving, and I actually can't remember now what the grief was, but it wasn't just a little dip, it was actually grief. And I was sitting with my friend Molly, and I still remember on the, whatever you call those L-shaped couches in my basement living room, and I just poured the whole thing out. And she listened, and it took quite a while. And once I was quiet, after a minute, she said two words, "I'm sorry." And there was a tear in her eye. She didn't try to fix me. She didn't try to cheer me up. She just said, "I'm sorry." And here I am, probably 15 years later, remembering that and telling you about it. So these gracious words, which I think often are heaven sent, because they're heaven sent, they're empowered. And these words, oh, the comfort, the inexpressible comfort of feeling safe with someone, of not having to measure words or weigh thoughts, but pour them all out, wheat and chaff together, trusting that a faithful hand will take and sift them, keeping what is good, and with the breath of kindness blowing the rest away. We can be that for each other. What about our kids? What about, how can we encourage our children with our words? So many ways. One of the ways that I loved, and I know I've talked about it here with you all, is a daily blessing. Maybe that's something you all are all familiar with, but the idea is just that every day you have one blessing, usually it's a little chunk of scripture, that you say over the child. We used to do it at bedtime, and I just put my hand on the child's head and repeat the same thing night after night after night. For my daughter, it was, "May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you, be gracious to you, and give you his peace." I do know it better than that. Now I know it as song. And sometimes, even though they're middle-aged people now, they would really not like me to say that anyway. Even though they're not children anymore, let's scratch that. I still often sit in my office and sing that to them, you know, whatever their blessing was. So, and it's also a great way, it's very hard to put your hand on their head and say a blessing when you're furious at them. So it's really a good way of putting things up at the end of the day. Another thing that I have loved that my grandchildren have taught me, and I bet you all probably already do this, but the game Bloom, Bud, Thorn. You all know that game? Where you, usually it's at the dinner table, and each person says what her bloom is, what her bud is, and what her thorn is from that day. And the bloom is what went well, what was good. And the bud is what good thing are you looking forward to? And the thorn is what hurt, what went wrong. So it's fun to just listen to what the kids have to say, and it also gets them in the habit of looking at their day that way. But what I've discovered is, so I play by myself all the time now, and I play at night pretty much every night. But I play a lot during the day now. I played just driving over here. Just, it would be, might be, boy, these trees just take your breath away now. They're so beautiful. So there's a, can be a constant upward thank you. You all were one of my buds, but now you've bloomed, so now you're one of my blooms. And then the thorns, what I find is, first of all, you notice their position, they're last, they're not the main deal. And often for us in our thinking and speaking, they are the main deal. What pops readily to mind is what went wrong. But this is cultivating the habit of what went right, what were the gifts of the day. And the thorns become something that I can talk to the Lord about. So it gets them up and out, whereas often I just want to sort of shove them under the rug, forget about them. I'm wandering all over the place. Oh, and I forgot, who has time? Okay, got that. I usually set my alarm on my phone and I forgot. We have a few more minutes. I wanted to mention too, part of the adventure of gracious conversation is that there can be thoughts and words sent from above. And depending on where you are in your faith, that may sound like hocus pocus, but I would invite you to give it a try and just do an experiment if it does. Two tales as I was preparing came to mind as illustrations of that. One was a long time ago, my dad died in 2006, so this is a long time ago, just before he died. He and I were in the little town I grew up in on the Eastern Shore, and we went out to lunch. And we'd been at lunch for a long time, because when you're old, it takes a long time to eat lunch. We'd finished, and they cleared the place, and I was feeling like, I just had this sense there's more. We had shot the breeze, which is fine, but I just had a sense there's something more. And so I just asked the Lord, is there something I could ask? And what came to me was, well, Dad, what have you been thinking about lately? And as soon as the words were out, I thought, what a weird thing to say. Well, he's been telling me for two hours what he's been thinking about lately. But I really think those words were heaven sent, because the first thing he did was reach, his sunglasses were on the table, put them on. He always put his sunglasses on when he didn't want you to see his eyes tear. And we spent about another half hour with his telling me what was really going on. And it's interesting, now all these years later, I can't remember really what he talked about, but what I remember is those words weren't mine. And they also weren't eloquent. Like, you think if something comes from heaven, it's going to be this, whoa, knock you over. It's really not. And then the other tale, which is, so what these stories are illustrating is these words give life. They energize. They give hope. Anyway. So the other tale was, I was immersed in studying this and studying gratitude, which is, of course, thank you is one of the biggest, best, most powerful set of words we can say. Let me just say, this is a parenthetical, and now I need to remember to go back to Sarianne, but parenthetically, this men are for Mars, women are for Venus, I don't know if that's still in vogue, but I believe it's very true, and if you have little boys, they look like they come from Venus, but they don't. And you'll find that out. But anyway, I wanted to pass on. Ray and I have been, my husband and I have been together 50 years. And if I could tell you, if I could tell you the thing that is most often cause trouble, it's, I don't feel appreciated. Oh, but wait. He doesn't feel appreciated either. And so these Venus and Mars books, one of the things I gleaned from them and need to practice more. Two things that Martians love to hear. Thank you, and that makes sense. Now, I have to tell you that You have to say that makes sense out loud. And then to yourself, you have to say, on Mars. All right, so that's my little marriage tidbit. Okay, so back to, I'm fascinated by this, the power of gratitude. And I was practicing every day asking God for one person to thank. So I remember, so funny, the memory. I remember I was sitting at my desk in our living room, and we're clear as crystal, asked the Lord, and what came to mind was this woman, Sarah Ann, who was my parents' peer, and who loved me so well as a child. She would take me to the skating rink in Chincoteague. If you grew up on the Eastern Shore, like the skating rink, she took me to Ocean City. This was as close as you ever get to heaven as a kid on the Eastern Shore. She'd invite me to her house for taffy pulls. She just loved me so well. I hadn't seen or, I'm ashamed to say, thought of her for, I don't know, almost 40 years. And I was sitting at my desk. Her name came to mind again, I believe heaven sent. And I thought, well, gosh, I've got a ton to do today, and I don't know where she is. So with very little trouble, it's a teeny little town, I found out that she was at the, what are you supposed to call them, retirement homes. I called and said, is there a woman there named Sarah Ann Shields? They said, oh yeah, she's in room da-da-da-da, I'll ring her. And I said, Sarah Ann, this is Betsy Bird. She said, oh darling, so good to hear from you, like I had just talked to her last week. And I said, I want to thank you. I've been sitting here thinking of all the things you did for me as a child, and I've never thanked you, and I want to thank you. So we had that conversation, but part of what I want to convey in these stories is it never ends there. There's always more. And in this case, the more was exponentially more. She and I then stayed in touch. I visited her many times. She told me stories about my parents that I never would have known. And one of the things she would always say to me every visit was, Bets, you are rich because you had wonderful parents. And you know how you get, you think, speaking of the power of words, you think you have license to criticize your parents? I did. So she did me so much good in those latter years. And then at the very end, just before the cancer killed her, I was by her bedside and holding her hand, and I started to cry, and she said, it's okay, darling, you just go ahead. Even in those last words she spoke to me, they were permission. It's okay. It's okay. So anyway, that's an odd conclusion, but I'm looking at the clock and it's time to conclude and switch into Q&A. So if anybody, this can be a question, it could also be, oh, I have a story, just sort of whatever suits you all. Uh-huh.
So what's your go-to to change the words that you speak to yourself? Mm-hmm. When you start to go, when you're, like you said, wanting to isolate or in our,
yes,
that's a good place. What words do you then speak to yourself?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's such a good question. I'm so glad you asked it. That self-talk. One of the things that I try to say to myself, whether literally or figuratively, is would I say that to a friend? Would I tell Shannon that she's really whatever the negative thought was?
Yeah.
No. So that's been big, and I'm glad you raised it, because we've been talking about, so words are like icebergs, and we've been talking about the tip of the iceberg, which the scientists say is only 10%. There's 90% below the surface. And I would bet you, if you go back to the beginning with Robert E. Lee, I would bet you that he didn't speak so graciously when he was a younger man before he had suffered. But and then also just simply realizing that apart from God, I'm not going to have much good to say. If I do, it's going to be to flatter you so you'll flatter me back. Right? So I was just, even this morning, praying, may the words of my mouth please you. That's from Psalms. But how amazing. How huge is God? And the words I speak into this microphone could give him joy. And then another thing that I that has been really helpful to me, and again, I think what your question raises this bloom, bud, thorn dynamic again, because when it comes to self-talk, often we speak to ourselves the thorns, the things that we see are wrong. One thing that's really toxic about that and really not reality as reality is I am actually not my own. I really don't have, to use a legal term, I really don't have standing to criticize myself. Because I've said that I belong to God, that he created me. I can't take one breath by myself. And so what if I'm his? What if scripture's right? What if we started living as if it's right? What if I'm a work of art? What if David's words were right? What if I am a gem? What if you are a gem? No matter who doesn't see it. And I think that's what, with aging, what I found is I'm beginning to see things more as they are, and it's bothering me less that other people don't see it. Let me say one more thing. I've been for a couple of years immersed in the Ignatian exercises. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but Ignatius from 500 years ago has taught me a prayer, which I want to pass on to you. It's a prayer without limit. It just sort of grows and changes shape as the days, with depending on my need of the day. Very simple, asking God for knowledge of all the many blessings received, so that filled with gratitude, I might in all things love and serve him. And just think about that with your question of what do we fill ourselves with this toxic self-talk? Kind of despair. But to be filled with gratitude, I mean, when you're filled with gratitude, it's a game changer. So, but these are gifts. We can't flip a switch. It's a both and. We ask God for this, and we practice like mad. You practice like your kids practice soccer. You practice like you practice to learn the piano. And it's fun. Just today, practice. I'm going to say thank you to one person. Or I'm going to join Picasso and give the gift of a word to somebody today. So it becomes more of a treasure hunt, an adventure, than a thing to add to your to-do list. I've just talked for 10 minutes for one question. Sorry. Who else has it?
Regards to children, when do you have words that you either did speak over when you were in those child-rearing years, or now would be saying, like, when you're getting frustrated? I feel that that's when I like say things that are probably the most damaging my frustration, and then I feel it immediately. You're like, oh, that was that was too far. That was not necessary, and that was really unkind. And there's a lot of repenting to my kids, but do you have like any advice or things that you would tell yourself now or told your children then that happened?
I'm thinking, trying to think both then and now. One thing I'm trying to do was get out. Well, once they were old enough to be safe without me in the room, I would try to leave. Like when I felt myself becoming dangerous. Try to just say, I'm going to go up to my room for a little bit. I'm sending myself to my room for a little bit. And then, as you said, I'm sorry. And allowing the I'm sorry to stand on its own and being gentle with yourself. Because it's not rude. It's what the trip up does not negate everything else the way we think it does. That's part of the self-talk. That's part of the self-talk.
Say that again. That's important.
So it's just natural as a mom to take on more than we actually have responsibility for. And it's good. If you can learn it now when you're still feeding them baby food, it's so much easier. Because my oldest are 40 now, and I still have to remind myself, oh, wait, he's a grown man. I don't have to take that on. If he's sad today, that's not my fault. And again, just as we said with the self-talk, I'm not my own. The kids aren't ours either. And I mean that from a very deep place. They're really not our own. They have their own story. And I am sure if they were here, they could take the mic and tell you things that I did that hurt becomes part of their story. And we have a God who works, who works, who works, who works, who works. And we all know that verse. He works all things together for the good of those who love him. And I've always skipped over the he works part and just jumped to, oh boy, he works. But we have a God who's working in our children. He's working in us. We literally won't leave this room the same people we were when we walked in. We are works of art, and we are always being created.
My question is very similar in that I think that I've said I'm sorry to my kids a million times. Uh-huh. And I've gotten good at acknowledging that mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but I sometimes feel like that I'm sorry comes out empty, mm-hmm. feeling to mm-hmm. them because I'm apologizing. But then the frustration happens and I do the same thing again or say yeah. something hurtful again.
Yeah.
What other words or what can I put behind that it doesn't just feel like an empty I'm sorry, but that it really is authentic because I do mean it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna keep making the mistake.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have any magic words or answer to that, but again, I would go back to the best thing we can do for our kids, no matter how old they are, the best thing we can do is fall in love with God. That sounds like I'm trying to end-run your question, but I'm really not. It changes everything, and the more you do, the more you realize that it's really okay. No child is gonna hear a frequent "I'm sorry" and just look you in the eye and say, "Oh, I receive that." Thank you for that blessing. Are as much for us as they are for them. But then just to trust, the more, the older I get, the more I realize how enormous God is, how enormous his compassion and his love is. The more, like just driving over here, I was just thinking, I'm so lucky, I get to just forget about myself. I used to stand up to do talks and like, all this energy wasted, because what are you going to think of me? And what if I forget what I was going to say? And he's huge. He's huge. And if I screw up and forget everything I'm going to say, the world keeps on turning. He keeps on loving me. You all feel better about yourselves, because hey, if she can stand up and make a fool of herself. The way, just hearing your question, what I'm hearing is how much you love these kids. That's the big deal. That's the big deal. That's what they receive.
Yeah. Can I add one thing to that?
Yes, please do.
Talk about emotions, which we've also talked about in Kindred before. We've had a speaker for that as well.
Uh-huh.
Big emotions. So if you address that to your children, I'm sorry, mommy has big emotions.
Oh, yes.
That's what's coming out right now.
Yes.
Like, in turn, then you're teaching them that it's normal, it's okay to have big emotions.
That's right.
But that's okay for them too. And then you say that to them too when they're having like a meltdown or something. Oh, I see you're having some big emotions right now.
Uh-huh.
That's okay.
Uh-huh.
Let's breathe and calm down and then
yeah.
talk about it rather
yeah.
than go into the yelling or whatever. So.
Yeah.
But sorry is okay. That's like definitely right. That's
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
thing you can do because you're teaching them that that's normal and then they apologize as well.
Right.
Or they learn to.
Right. Good input.
Big emotions.
Good input. Big emotions, yes.
I'm going to turn us to table talk.
Uh-huh.
You are amazing. Yeah. I love it when you come. We're so thankful that you are here. But I put you, Helen, to prepare a couple questions. questions, and I want to give us a little time for, you know, talk in small groups. So we'll turn to those.
Are you going
to
hold up your picture?
Yeah, you're going to hold up
your
picture.
Let me show you my picture. So there's the original.
Oh, that's nice.
It actually is very, very lovely in real life. May I
yes.
take 2 more minutes?
Oh, absolutely.
So I had a wonderful Irish great aunt, and she taught me this, and I want to leave you with it. Loving words will cost but little journeying up the hill of life, but they make the weak and weary stronger, braver for the strife. Do you count them only trifles, what for earth or sun and rain? Never was a kind word wasted. Never was one said in vain. So that's to you from Auntie Marg.